مؤمنین سنخیت حاکمه، یک روح بر همشون.
A common soul is commanding over the minds of all believers in the world. The sense of faithful soul and velaya is ruling over all of them. Therefore, we have to be responsible to each other. The Holy Prophet of Islam was the best human since he was worried about the affairs of the other people of his community. Ahlul Bayt, alayhumus salam, were among such faithful people too. You might have heard the famous story of giving the iftar meal of Imam Ali alayhi salam and his family to the needy people. This is how they sacrifice for the other believers. Truly, Prophet Muhammad and Ahlul Bayt were attentive to the problems of others. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warned that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached the length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born, although there were times when I had seen his mustache short. My dad is famous for his mustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his mustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways, that the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, 3D projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have been the record, beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4-meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial alerce. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borichevich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he is going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909 in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children, and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Perez Mora the oldest living person last week. Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscience of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. Artists in a small town in the United Kingdom have created a massive bumblebee mural, hoping to raise awareness about this vanishing species. The mural was painted on the playing field of a primary school in the town of Haptonbridge. It was debuted on International Bee Day. The artist used paints typically used to draw lines for football pitches. Scientists say rising temperatures and heavy pesticide use are contributing to the decline in the number of bumblebees across Europe and North America. They say the population reduction rate is consistent with mass extinction of a species altogether. Children at a school have also created a white flower meadow to help encourage bees to pollinate.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to IRB English Radio. This is Asma, your humble host for today's episode. And you're hearing me from Q&A on Islamic belief, in which we shall discuss some very controversial issues. Well, without further ado, I would like to go directly into the main of discussion. But before that, I would like to introduce my guest. Welcome, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm so happy to meet you here again.
My pleasure.
So here with us, we have Dr. Karimi. And in this episode, we're going to discuss some debatable questions. So stay tuned. Welcome to another session. Well, previously we talked about OCD people and also those who are suffering from waswas. And we came to the point where we discussed those people who have problem with purity and impurity of every single thing. Whatever they do, the supplications they are going to make, they are very unsure about whether they have done it right or wrong. They change it many times, they redo it on and on. So we, Brother Karimi actually gave us some advices, and now we're going to complete that. So, Brother Karimi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, we mentioned some practical ways, and lastly, we were talking about ignoring such doubts when it comes to purity and impurity, making ablution, saying the prayer, and the fact that according to the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, when it comes to wudu and salat, ablution and prayer, from the third doubt onwards, we need to ignore the doubt, which means that, as we mentioned, your prayer is accepted by God with all those doubts, with all those deficiencies that you think are in your ablution. Your prayer is accepted by God from the third doubt onwards. You need to ignore the doubt. Your prayer is accepted, and we do not need more.
God is satisfied,
With that. So going along the same line, it's been mentioned by the scholars that, let me also share one story from Ayatollah Burujadi, rahmatullah alayhi. He says that in Isfahan, I was studying with Ayatollah Mirza Abu Mahali Kalbasi, and I had told him that sometimes when it is the time for prayer, I have some doubt whether it is the time for prayer or I need to wait for a couple of minutes, for example. And I somehow was suffering from waswas when it regarding the time for the prayer. Once we were in the mosque of Hakim, and then there was the call for prayer, and the Ayatollah told me that Agha Hussein, addressing Ayatollah Burjadi, they are saying the adhan, just stand up and say the prayer. Ayatollah Burjadi says that I try to wait as if I did not hear him. So it means that how difficult it is for people suffering from that to get rid of that. But then he repeated, Agha Hussein, stand up and just say, I'm going to read the prayer, Qurbatan illallah. So he said that I did that and I got rid of that doubt from that time onward. So, I mean, people suffering from that, if you are suffering from the time of the prayer, just stand up and say your prayer, because God says that this is what I'm expecting you to do.
Until there is no certainty, then you have to do it.
Exactly. Some people, as I mentioned, when it comes to the major ablution or ghusl, it took them a lot of time. But God says that I accept this ghusl even if you are still consider yourself as junub or impure, but I consider you pure, which means that even if in reality you are still impure, but from my perspective, you are pure, which means that you can touch the Quran, you can read the Quran, you can do your prayers, and this is what matters. So people suffering from that should think about that. What matters? My understanding of the Islamic laws or God's explanations of the Islamic laws? So, I think it's a very difficult task, but in a gradual manner, when they think, they study, and
exactly.
They read the stories of the scholars, such people need role models as well. So I think if they read the stories, even at the time of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt and our scholars, they can be very helpful. Let me share a very interesting narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam. We are talking about Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, just telling us how we need to consider the issue of purity or impurity. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, are we now the billah higher than Imam Ali alayhi salam in terms of being,
scholars
and considerate about the Islamic law?
The details, yes.
Imam says that ma abali abulun asabani aw ma un idha lam a'lam. Imam says that when I don't know if what touched me was water or urination, which is impure, of course, then I don't care. It doesn't matter for me because I do not know. So this is the commander of the faithful telling us. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that I consider it pure because I'm not sure. And I mean, this is Islam. This is the simple Islam that the Prophet and the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt have talked about. And this is a principle. This is the principle of tahara or purity. As I mentioned, everything is pure according to the religion.
Unless you make sure it's impure.
You make sure, that's the point. And everything is halal, is permitted, unless you make sure that it is forbidden. So this is two principles that can help the people a lot.
So they have to consider two laws. One is the fact that God does not want us to be in terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we do, it is true unless we are sure that something is wrong with
exactly.
it.
A person went to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and asked him about eating cheese. He had some doubts about whether the cheese in the bazaar is permitted or not. Imam understood that this person is suffering from waswas. He gave some money to one of his servants and told him that go and buy me some cheese. And according to this narration, the servant brought the Imam some cheese, and Imam just began to eat the cheese. So instead of telling him, Imam practically told him that this is what I'm doing as your Imam. But interestingly, this part of the narration is very interesting. Again, it is putting emphasis on the fact that this is a very difficult problem, and us as people who are not suffering from that should not take it lightly. Just to expect the people to, get rid of that
yes.
all of a sudden.
Yes, when it is dyed deep in the wool, mm-hmm. there is no way to get exactly. out of it. But we have to practice.
So that person is a follower of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He comes to Imam, he asks about eating cheese. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam himself buys the cheese and he eats the cheese. So the answer of the question is clear. But the narration says that the man repeated the question, which means that he didn't believe in, still he had some mm-hmm. problems with eating the cheese.
It means that their problem is very deep.
Yeah. And Imam told him that, didn't you see that I'm eating the cheese? He said that, yes, but I'd like to hear it from you. You see how
just deep
the
problem,
just to make sure. And the Imam says that regarding cheese or any other thing, everything regarding which we have halal and haram permitted and forbidden, it is permitted for you to consume, to eat, unless you make sure that it is forbidden, it is haram. Only in that case you need to be refraining from that.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
In another narration, a person told Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam that my nose is bleeding and I'm not sure whether some drops of it, dropped over my clothes or not. Imam said that before that you were sure about the purity of your clothes and now you have doubt whether it is impure or not.
Stained or not.
Then do not break your certainty with doubt. And this is a principle in Islamic jurisprudence. When you're certain about something, then you have doubt, it means that you should ignore the doubt.
You should go with the certainty.
Go with the certainty. Then the narrator of the narration asked the Imam that, is it an obligation upon me to search, to look whether...
To dig deep and find a problem.
If there is a drop of blood over my body, Imam said that, of course not. There is no need for you to... search for it. So this is the reality of the religion of Islam. Islam is against being extreme in this regard and make the religion so difficult. We have the principle of tahara, purity, which, as I mentioned before, everything is pure unless you make sure that it is impure. I talked about choosing role models. I mentioned that if you are a person suffering from OCD, try to choose friends who are not suffering from the same problem.
Yes.
So if you are surrounded by the same people, they are helping you just to increase your problem.
Your problem would be magnified.
Would be magnified, yeah. So for all the problems, it's very important that if you are really trying to get rid of the problems, we need to be surrounded by the people who can help us. At least the people who are neutral, mm-hmm. but they are not going to increase our problem.
Who would take those magnifiers off of our eyes.
Exactly, yeah. And the next point that I would like to share is a concept that we have in Islamic spirituality, and this is the concept of muhasabatun nafs, self-account.
I guess this is the part they have problem with. When they come to account themselves for every single thing they do, they find themselves guilty.
But here... I would like to say that self-account, based on my explanation, is a cure for this problem. What is muhasabatun nafs? Imagine you are a person suffering from backbiting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Islam says that there is a three-stages solution for that on a daily basis. These three stages are called musharata, muraqaba, and muhasaba. Musharata means early in the morning you make a condition for yourself that imagine you're backbiting the people 10 times on a daily basis. You know that you cannot get rid of that altogether.
You make a promise to yourself.
You make a promise that today I will backbite only 5 people, not 10 people.
Not 10.
Of course, if you can get rid of that all at once, it's much better. But
it
anyway,
would be a miracle,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it would be a miracle. So this is called musharata. Early in the morning, like after morning prayer, we think that this is the problem I'm suffering from, so I make this promise between myself and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. During the day, you do muraqaba, which means you take care of your actions. Okay, I have promised God in the early morning that I will not backbite any person or more than 5 people. So during the day, you do muraqaba, and at night, before going to sleep, you do muhasaba. You think about your actions, mm-hmm. whether you were able to act upon your promise to God or not. So for the first day, it's very natural that most of the people, they have failed. This is very natural because it's been a habit for them. But the next day, on the first day, they backbite 10 people like before. But you do it the next day, the third day. At least after two weeks, you come to this conclusion that, okay, alhamdulillah, you are
it's
not backbiting.
It's starting to work.
It's starting to work. So it's a kind of three-stage solution which can help us to get rid of many problems, many sins that we are committing and we are used to them. So it's called musharata, muraqaba, and muhasaba. And to give it like a kind of guarantee, some scholars say that just to make it a firm promise, you can mention that, okay, oh God, I promise that if I backbite like more than five people, I will fast the following day. So it makes the muraqaba a bit more serious.
Authorized.
Because, yeah. You know that it would be a difficult task to fast the next day. Or it can be any other action. For example, I will walk for 2 kilometers. It's heavy for you, so you will take care of your action. And if you break the promise on the first day,
you have to make for it.
You need to do that because it's a kind of nadr or vow. So for the second day, you will be more cautious. So it's, to some extent, it's very practical for people suffering from different kinds of problems and illnesses.
Yes, and generally, these sort of people shouldn't go into detail a lot.
Yeah.
That's a very important point for these people.
And the last point that I would like to share is that I also advise these people to consult the people who are expert in nutrition. There is special food that can increase this problem and a special food that can help them get rid of that. Especially if you have it in the traditional so-called medications and medicine. If they refer to real experts in this regard, they can give them some special types of food and drinks which can help them. Also, I mean, as a kind of,
a schedule.
Yeah.
Daily schedule. To,
beside all those explanations that we make, beside going to, a specialist and consulting the psychologist, the foods and the drinks
what
that we consume.
Do matter.
It also matters.
So thank you. We learned a lot from you. Thank you for today's episode. And until next session, I bid you farewell.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Gate of Knowledge. exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Islam, based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently going through the 16th sermon, which is quite a lengthy sermon, but there are certain important parts that are important for our discussion and which will be a source of guidance in trying to understand the different aspects of Islamic governance. One of the sections that is important, one of those aspects that are important, is that program, that governance program that a leader has in mind. And Imam Ali alayhi salam in this sermon kind of sheds light on this aspect of the governance. He sheds light on this aspect of the governance, but of course he starts with a very firm and clear statement, a very serious statement, to show his complete, you can say, dedication towards the words that he is going to say, by saying that ذِمَّتِي بِمَا أَقُولُ رَهِينَةً وَأَنَا بِهِ زَعِيمٌ, basically trying to say that, look, the words that I'm going to say, I'm going to say them with full responsibility, and I'm going to make sure that I will execute the statements that I'm saying, and I'm making sure that the statements that I've said are true and correct. This is the power of a leader when he starts off, meaning that there are no jokes, the purpose is clear, that purpose has to be achieved. Then he goes on to say that إِنَّ مَنْ صَرَّحَتْ لَهُ الْعِبَرُ عَمَّا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ مِنَ الْمَثُلَاتِ حَجَزَتْهُ التَّقْوَى عَنْ تَقَحُمِ الشُّبَهَاتِ. Then he's telling the people that, look, those who have learnt the lessons from what has happened in the past, what has been happening in the society, they will achieve a certain awareness, certain, you know, insight that will stop them from entering into areas that are confusing and doubtful.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are discussing about the governance program that Imam Ali alayhi salam had in mind for his government. And we came across this statement where Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to talk about taking lessons. إِنَّ مَنْ صَرَّحَتْ لَهُ الْعِبَرُ عَمَّا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ مِنَ الْمَثُلَاتِ حَجَزَتْهُ التَّقْوَى أَنْ تَقَحُمِ الشُّبَهَاتِ. He's saying those for whom lessons are clear regarding the events that have taken place in the past, such a person will achieve a level of insight, a level of awareness, a level of safeguarding himself that will stop him from entering into areas of doubt and confusion. In other words, Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us that the past events that have happened in history, these are like a mirror through which you see the present events that are happening in your life. You keep the mirror of the past events, the lessons that you have learned from the past, and use those things to see the present and the future. This is a very beautiful thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us. The lessons are of the past, but when you pay attention to those lessons and you reflect them in the present scenario, and you struggle to kind of analyze those lessons, those events in present circumstances, then those things, those events and those lessons that were of the past, now they become of the present. And they become a reflection of the reality of the world that exists today. And it gives you a clear picture, a very precise understanding of the events that are happening in your time. And this is because there is something very important in history. There is something very important about the life of this world, about the universe that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created, and that is the presence of some absolute laws that govern the universe, and those laws that also govern the events and the activities of the society. These are some things that we can consider and try to pay attention to.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. So we were discussing about those specific, laws, general principles that exist in the society. If you look at the Quran is very clear about this, that all those events that have happened in the past and the events that continuously occur throughout history, these are all under the influence of certain rules and regulations and certain principles that exist in the universe. And these are principles that are the absolute, they are throughout the whole world and throughout time and space. And they do not change. Just like in the universe, there are so many laws that are unchangeable. Okay, just like how certain times become cold, certain times become warm. These laws are so precise that you can even predict, for example, a certain weather because of understanding those principles and laws. This shows that there are some kind of constant laws and rules that exist in this universe, in the world that we live in. Similarly, we have the social world, we have the community, the realm of the community, the realm of the social interactions and the world whereby people live, the life of the people, the world of people's life. This world where people live and their lifestyle and the interactions in the society, these also are governed by these principles. وَلَن تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَبْدِيلًا وَلَن تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَبْدِيلًا. This is a clear verse of the Quran that say that these general principles will never change. You will see that they occur and occur once again. Just like when you look at those general principles that govern the material aspect of the universe, you can analyze a new event based on those principles, a new phenomenon based on those principles. Similarly, in the social arena, you can analyze new phenomenon in the society based on the on those principles that you have been able to extract by analyzing the societies of the past. This is a very important and integral part of the Quran, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has emphasized and which Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to make us realize. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He gives us the opportunity to understand the depths of what occurs in the world. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه ربه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. Between 2015 and 2021, the Ministry of Strategic Affairs led the global war on the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement. It paid for favourable press coverage, recruited troll armies, and covertly funded Zionist groups around the world. Today, we look at the subversion campaign of the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, and we trace it through to the activities of an apparently left-wing British lecturer called David Hirsch. Later in the show, we'll look at how Hirsch's critics have been ruthlessly smeared and how they've fought back. As always, I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to find out more after this special report by Bianca Rahimi on the Ministry of Strategic Affairs and its covert role in the UK.
In 2015, the Ministry of Strategic Affairs was given the job of lead ministry for challenging the Palestine Solidarity Movement. The ministry, led by Gilad Erdan and run by a former military intelligence officer, used overt and covert methods to sabotage and delegitimize activist groups and individuals. It smeared supporters of BDS as terrorists. It recruited troll armies and it trained activists to dig up compromat and smear supporters of Palestinian liberation. One participant in this effort has been David Hirsch, a sociologist based at Goldsmiths College in London. He has been involved for decades in supporting key foreign policy objectives of the Zionist entity. Hirsch is a former member of the Zionist Trotskyist sect, the Alliance for Workers' Liberty, who regards himself as part of the democratic left tradition, though he also has no objection to being recognized as a Jew or a Zionist. In 2006, Hirsch established Engage, a campaign explicitly focused on combating BDS, which focused solely on alleged anti-Semitism. It has been claimed that Zionist lobby groups, the Board of Deputies and Jewish Leadership Council funneled £50,000 to Engage, which challenges the idea that it was a grassroots campaign. Also in 2006, Hirsch helped develop the Euston Manifesto, concerned with countering opposition to the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. In 2007, he received funds from the Rothschild family charity Hanadiv to study anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. In 2008 and 2009, Hirsch travelled to Jerusalem to attend the Global Forum for Combating Anti-Semitism, hosted by Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. His speech at the 2008 forum predicted the main manifestation of anti-Semitism in the near future is going to be conspiracy theory. In previously secret documents disclosed by the Ministry of Strategic Affairs under information legislation, it was revealed that millions had been spent on funding a network of front groups to promote the regime. One was the Institute for the Study of Global Antisemitism and Policy, based in New York, which received $445,000 in 2018, nearly 80% of its reported revenue that year. It failed to disclose this payment publicly. The funds were earmarked for the group's annual seminar at Oxford University in the UK. David Hirsch spoke at both the 2018 and 2019 events. A Ministry of Strategic Affairs subvention was not mentioned by ISGAP in either year. Palestine Declassified has searched the publications of David Hirsch over the last two decades and found no conflict of interest disclosures by himself referencing any money, expenses or hospitality received from the Zionist movement or directly from the regime. He regularly denounces the idea of secret conspiracies in support of Israel, while appearing to involve himself directly in such activities as an asset of the Zionist regime.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and former professor at Bristol University and a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. He's also a co-founder and co-director of a lobbying watchdog initiative, Spinwatch. We're also joined by Mick Napier, who's the secretary of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. He's led the organisation in a number of successful campaigns against the Zionist movement, including a campaign against the racist Jewish National Fund. Mick describes himself as a lifelong socialist and anti-racist, and the only Scot certified free of racism by two Scottish courts. And Mick joins us from Glasgow. Welcome to the show.
David, I wonder if I could probably start with you. Tell us about the Global Forum for Combating Anti-Semitism. It's hosted by the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, isn't it? And what's David Hirsch's role with it all?
Well, this is a thing which goes back before the Ministry of Strategic Affairs and was set up, in fact, by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs back in 2000 or so. And it has focused its efforts on blurring together anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. And it's spent a long, long time doing that. And the culmination of its efforts is the well-known IHRA working definition of anti-Semitism, which does the very thing. It blurs together anti-Zionist criticisms with anti-Semitism and tries to smear anti-racists as being racists. Now, Hirsch has been involved with this on a number of occasions. He doesn't deny this. His name appears on the relevant documents and shows that he spoke there. His speech in 2008, he says, one of the key things that's going to happen in the future is there's going to be conspiracy theory. And he's been banging on about that for more than a decade. So this is an effort by the Israeli regime to blur together anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. And that was then used in the whole process that's erupted, for example, in the UK, in attacking the Corbyn-led Labour Party and indeed any other person who stands up for Palestinian rights. And they use this as the weapon, and Hirsch has been part of the process of developing this weapon.
Right, yeah. I mean, Mick, can we get Mick up on the screen? I mean, Hirsch's short-lived Engage project was reportedly funded by the Board of Deputies and the Jewish Leadership Council, and a former key figure in that group was Dennis McShane, of course, who viewers may remember was jailed for his phony expenses claims. I mean, what do you think that says, Mick, about the moral quality, really, of the people involved in this?
Oh, that's a lovely question. I mean, when Corrupt Dennis did some porridge, he was not such an exception to the rule. It really does pay every now and again to reflect on the quality, the calibre of the people who are leading the smear campaign against, you know, Corbyn, David and others. I mean, I attended a disciplinary tribunal for the Church of England, actually, last week in London. It lasted 5 days. And we were honoured with the presence of the complainer, Marie van der Zyl, who's currently the president of the Board of Deputies of British Jews, who insisted that the Reverend Stephen Zeiser was a vile academic who trawled the internet, the darkest corners of the internet, for anti-Semitic material, dredged it up and polluted British political life. I mean, it was complete fantasy. When she was cross-examined by a pretty good barrister, under oath, she collapsed. She refused to answer many questions. And when she was asked about the provenance of her complaint even, she actually had the temerity to say to the barrister, "It's none of your business." All of us in the room, we had never seen such a dreadful performance by anyone under cross-examining. And I think that's what happens when you get any of these guys, not just van der Zyl, because Jonathan Arkush followed her, not quite as bad, but pretty poor. And in defending their smears, they just made it was ham-fisted. It was a joy to watch. I mean, schadenfreude, I try and avoid it, but when these people who are leading the campaign to smear and destroy lives and get people sacked, fired, when they get cross-examined, they collapse. You know why? Because however bad a card player you are, if you've got four aces, you can beat any of them. And that's what will happen. Get them on a level playing field, and it's a contest.
David, I just wanted to turn to you again and just ask you about the fact that the Ministry of Strategic Affairs set up a private company, didn't they, to push their operation. They even changed its name on at least one occasion. Can you say a bit about that? What's going on there? Why have they done that? Why have they set up a private company to push what
they... The key reason was to disguise where the money was coming from. Now, in particular, that was in all the global activities they were doing. But in particular, in the US, of course, there's a legislation on foreign agents who have to register and declare what they're doing. And they wanted to get round the Foreign Agents Registration Act in the US so that the Zionist organizations that they funded could say, no, we're not getting money from a foreign principal, from a government, we're getting it from a private company. And so that was the effort, was to try and disguise that. But also in the UK, for example, they wanted to disguise where the money was going to, and they've taken several steps to do that. They passed money through the US and it came back to the UK, as we saw in the film there, or the contracts themselves have been secret, and it's only been through information legislation where these things have been disclosed. The Zionist Federation, for example, got a grant of some millions of pounds to do a lobbying work in this country. And there have been many other examples of money coming to the UK. But most of this is not yet public and has not been made public. So we're faced with not knowing how many of the myriad of pro-Israel organisations that have been created since the start of the Ministry of Strategic Affairs activities in 2015. We don't know how many of them were actually funded directly by the MSA and are actually, of course, not grassroots campaigns as they try and maintain.
I was interested, Mick, as well in what you were saying in response to my previous question about how the from the Board of Deputies crumbled under cross-examination, because they boasted about how close they are to the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, which is interesting. But I just wondered as well, Mick, as well as perhaps commenting on that briefly, if you could just tell us, I mean, you're attending a protest today, aren't you? You're speaking to from a car. Just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're doing there.
Oh, I apologise. I had to change a last-minute change of plan because we found out this morning that activists from Palestine Action have occupied the roof about 400 yards from here of the Thales arms factory. They cooperate with Elbit to produce drones and other weapons delivery systems to shatter Palestine or to shatter Yemen as well. So I had to come down here, offer solidarity with many others, and I thought I could use this as a mobile studio. Apologies if it's a bit tacky. It's not a fancy car.
I mean, we're very pleased that you're there, and it's great work that you know the Palestine Action are doing. We've spoken about Palestine Action on the show before. But David, just before we go to the next VT, I wonder whether you could comment on, is it going too far to suggest that David Hirsch is an Israeli asset, do you think?
Well, I think we should be cautious about using terms like asset. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to put people in the frame for something which they innocently wandered into. But, I mean, I would define this in a fairly conservative way. I mean, the people who are assets of the Israeli state are those who are funded either directly or indirectly by the Israeli state, or who have leadership positions in organizations which are attached to the Zionist movement. And on those grounds, Hirsch ticks a number of boxes and has done for a number of years. We haven't even talked about all of the various ways in which he has been part of the Zionist movement's attempts to fuse together anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, to undermine the Jeremy Corbyn leadership, and indeed to attack academics and others who have dare to stand up for Palestinian rights. So, yes, he's plainly an asset. Now, they don't like it when you say this, but, you know, let's have the argument.
Yeah. Well, we'll just pause there for a moment and have a look at this report on how critics of Hirsch have been smeared and how they fought back.
...of things that we know are anti-Semitic.
McCarthyite stool pigeon David Hirsch, pictured here speaking at the Israeli regime-funded Menachem Begin Heritage Center, has been publicly humiliated after his failed attempt to get president of the student union investigated on bogus claims of anti-Semitism. The alleged academic and confirmed Israeli regime asset had been doing his best to denigrate calls at Goldsmith University for decolonization by student groups. True to form as a well-known advocate of Zionist colonization of Palestine, Hirsch sought to antagonize those working to deepen students' understanding of the parasitical phenomena. The permanently snaring dilettante chose to belligerently assert that there's an anti-Semitic edge to official institutional university campaigns to decolonize education.
In response to his uninvited opinion, Sarah Baffo, the president of Goldsmith Students' Union, fired back correctly that David Hirsch is a far-right white supremacist. Following his tattletale attempts to get her investigated, she again correctly described him as a Zionist with an explicit racist history. She was later backed up by current president of the National